Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, January 14th. I'm Gabriel Zucker, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Eureka Council declares opposition to U.S. actions in Venezuela. Vehicle-pedestrian collision under investigation. Collaboration leads to improved fire safety in brook trails. Stay tuned, those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region.
Opposition to strikes on alleged drug-running boats. A resolution approved by the Eureka City Council has been updated to oppose U.S. military strikes in Venezuela. Daniel Mintz reports.
The city of Eureka has formally declared that it, quote, condemns the ongoing U.S. military strikes, occupation, or occupation-like control of Venezuela in a new resolution. The city's engagement in national and global affairs was seen again at a January 12th special meeting of the City Council. On the agenda was a single item, a resolution, quote, opposing United States military occupation of Venezuela and support for the war powers. During a public comment period, members of the Humboldt Anti-War Committee thanked and praised the council for the special meeting and the resolution with a caveat. They and others who spoke objected to a sentence one speaker described as the stinker in an otherwise worthy resolution. The resolution on the agenda advanced opposition to U.S. military actions in Venezuela, quote, without explicit authorization from the United States Congress in compliance with the Constitution and the War Powers Resolution. Many speakers, including this one, said the sentence should be removed.
I couldn't imagine that you would go along with agreeing if our Congress did say it was okay to go into Venezuela, to have a war there, to do whatever we've just done to Venezuela. And so I have to agree with the anti-war team that, and I know we're having a protest on the 17th, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of people there addressing this. So please do make a statement about what our government has done in Venezuela.
Other than the part about getting authorization from Congress, support for the resolution was unanimous among all who spoke, with one speaker saying the resolution is, quote, actually way more progressive than what I've seen other city councils do. There was plenty of commentary about the military actions themselves, which were described as immoral and illegal. Others said the U.S. actions will, quote, cause more problems in that country, and that Venezuelans are among the, quote, indigenous peoples the United States is willing to kill for their natural resources. Some speakers responded to the argument that the council shouldn't spend time on matters beyond the scope of city business.
One of the biggest opposition arguments I've seen recently has been, well, Eureka should focus on Eureka. And I really want to speak to that because when it's our tax dollars, when we're complicit in these kinds of acts, when our country is breaking international laws, going against the UN, kidnapping the sovereign head of state and his wife, those are huge crimes. And we all bear some responsibility on some level. And it's really important that we don't let that happen on our watch, and that we do take a stand in whatever way we can. And also that we recognize that we don't want our tax dollars going towards that.
In motioning to approve the resolution, Councilmember Renee Contreras-Deloche vouched for removing the part about congressional approval, which other council members agreed with. The only council member making a substantial statement was Councilmember Katie Moulton, who said she is, quote, overwhelmed and dumbfounded by both foreign and domestic affairs.
When this resolution was proposed, it was about bombing boats in the Caribbean. Then things escalated quickly and significantly. I'm deeply concerned about and opposed to our government so blatantly violating international law. I'm also deeply concerned about and opposed to our government so blatantly disregarding our own laws on our own soil, unjustly and violently occupying our own cities. I'm disturbed by the dozens of survivors of sex trafficking who have spent decades bravely seeking justice, so far to no avail. I'm concerned by the wholesale destruction of our social safety nets and the looting of our natural resources, the desolation of our public lands. I'm afraid for my LGBTQ community members who are facing increasing danger every single day for simply existing. And this flood of atrocities is no accident. It is a tactic, and we cannot let the sheer volume overwhelm us. I'm shaking because I know that this is not enough. I want our city government to let the people in our community know that they are safe and that they are appreciated, and I want us to be able to speak with a voice as a city to the larger world.
The resolution's approval was unanimous, with Mayor Kim Burgell and Councilmember Scott Bauer absent. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
On January 6, 2026, at approximately 9:53 a.m., the Eureka Police Department, Humboldt Bay Fire, and the city ambulance responded to a report of a vehicle versus pedestrian collision in the 300 block of F Street. KMUD got a breakdown from Laura Montagna, the Eureka Police Department's public information officer.
This is Laura Montagna from the Eureka Police Department. Vehicle pedestrian collision under investigation. On January 6, 2026, at approximately 9:53 a.m., the Eureka Police Department, Humboldt Bay Fire, and City Ambulance responded to a report of a vehicle versus pedestrian collision in the 3000 block of F Street. The pedestrian, a 78-year-old female, sustained major injuries and was transported to a local hospital for treatment. Per standard protocol, personnel from EPD's Criminal Investigations Unit and Major Fatal Injury Team responded to the scene to conduct the investigation. The following are the preliminary facts known at this time. The pedestrian was walking westbound on the north sidewalk of Harris Street and entered the crosswalk to cross F Street. A truck was traveling eastbound on Harris Street and turned northbound on F Street as the traffic signal turned green. The truck collided with the pedestrian at a low speed. Alcohol or drug impairment does not appear to be a factor in this collision. The investigation is ongoing. Anyone who witnessed the collision or has information that may assist investigators is asked to contact EPD's Criminal Investigation Unit at 707-441-4300.
In August, the Mendocino County Fire Safety Council, the Brook Trails Township Community Service District, and the County of Mendocino, CAL FIRE, and local firefighting agencies came together to create a process that enabled the California Conservation Corps to perform weeks' worth of maintenance at no cost to the owners. Sarah Reith with the Mendo FSC shared this update with our listeners.
Thanks for tuning in to the Mendocino County Fire Safe Council podcast. We hope this series will help you learn how to survive and thrive in a wildfire-prone environment. The Mendocino County Fire Safe Council played a pivotal role in making sure fuels reduction work finally got done on undeveloped parcels and brook trails. Shortly before the holidays, the hills above the fire station echoed with the sound of chainsaws. The California Conservation Corps, CCC, was thinning fuels in an effort to head off another disastrous wildfire season. It was all paid for by grants and accomplished thanks to a multi-agency collaboration. There are about 4,400 undeveloped parcels in the township. Many of them are privately owned by people who live elsewhere and don't maintain them. Regardless of who owns them, unmaintained parcels can pose a threat to the entire neighborhood when vegetation gets overgrown, dries out, and turns into kindling for the next wildfire. Bobby Delgado, program coordinator for the Mendocino County Fire Safe Council, reflected on what it took to get the CCC to spend weeks cleaning up the neighborhood.
Originally, how we started, we were supported by the Coastal Conservancy, who provided funding to support us clearing undeveloped land in Brook Trails, specifically that was adjacent to homes. So we wanted to address the 100-foot defensible space that landowners weren't able to get because they were surrounded by undeveloped land.
Initially, the owners of undeveloped parcels got letters seeking permission to work on their property. It couldn't have been more simple, but
after a few years of sending out letters, we noticed that we weren't able to get letters from those landowners. Because either we had, you know, not up-to-date mailing addresses and they didn't even know they owned the land because they inherited the land and they've never seen the land. This has been going on for about 30 to 40 years.
Brook Trails has a nuisance vegetation ordinance that allows it to abate nuisance vegetation on private property and eventually recoup the costs from owners by placing a lien on the land. But the likelihood of ever getting reimbursed by people who have no interest in their assets and don't answer their mail is not worth the labor costs. To carry out the Coastal Conservancy grant-funded work, the Brook Trails Township Community Services District cooperated with the Mendocino County FireSafe Council to develop a new process, whereby the district sent abatement notices to property owners stating that if they did not get the work done themselves within 30 days, the Mendocino County FireSafe Council would be authorized to access their property to abate fuel load hazards. The letter inspired a number of absentee owners to step up and manage their own property by hiring crews to clean up their parcels.
If they don't take any action and they do not respond, then we have the right to work on their property.
So, as grant funds or other resources become available, this process can enable significant progress in abating nuisance vegetation. To maximize the potential benefit of the process, a pivotal meeting took place in August of last year between the Brook Trails Township Community Services District, the County of Mendocino, CAL FIRE, local firefighting agencies including the Ukiah Valley Fire District Fuels Reduction Crew, and the Mendocino County Fire Safe Council. At that meeting, the entities hammered out a plan. First, the fire chief would designate the most high-priority areas needing abatement work. Then, as grant-funded resources become available, property owners in those areas would receive letters seeking permission to do the work. If they didn't respond within 30 days, crews could access their properties and do it for them. Another opportunity soon arose out of a partnership between the Mendocino County FireSafe Council and the CCC. This allowed the FireSafe Council to design a project using a combination of state-funded CCC crews and FireSafe Council resources, like its chipper. That collaboration has expanded to include the CCC work currently underway in Brook Trails. There's still a lot of work to do as long as the resources are available to fund it.
We haven't even nearly touched the amount of letters to reach out to every single undeveloped landowner. Currently, we are focusing in those high prioritization spots that the chief had addressed, and we'll continue moving forward.
The fire chief has prioritized 5 locations, which will result in about 20 acres being treated for both roadside clearance and defensible space around homes. Delgado is optimistic about further collaborations with the CCC, the Ukiah Valley Fire District Fuels Crew, CAL FIRE, and others. She stopped by the work site to visit crew supervisor Cedar Long, who is guiding a group of young adults through the process of cutting down small trees safely and thoughtfully. Long has collaborated with the Mendocino County Fire Safe Council before, offering a popular women's chainsaw workshop in Laytonville. As a former firefighter in Mendocino and Humboldt counties, Long is fully committed to forest health and fire safety. Long took a break from the roar of chainsaws for a few minutes to share some words about the CCC's mission.
In addition to a huge labor force, we are also a youth development program. So we do a lot of skills instructions, trainings, certifications, things like that, that help prepare our core members for employment post-CCC. And so they're working on getting their fellers certifications with chainsaws. And so they're practicing bucking and limbing, falling trees. And then we prep all of that for going through the chipper, which is another of the trainings that we do. So they're working their tails off to get all the woody debris up to the chipper, and then it'll get run through, and those small chips will be distributed back through the forest floor to biodegrade and add nutrients back into the forest floor. It also helps to mulch and keep a bunch of resprouts from regrowing. So there's a whole lot of things going on. Many of our core members are interested in careers in firefighting, so learning about fuel diameters and fuel loading in the forests and how to improve ingress and egress, safe ingress and egress for both residents and firefighters is a huge part of their learning process here as well. Just makes them more knowledgeable and safer firefighters when they're out on the line.
Thanks for tuning in to the Mendocino County Fire Safe Council podcast. To learn more about improving fire safety and fire resiliency in your neighborhood, visit our website at firesafemendocino.org.
In state news, Solano County public workers begin massive 2-day strike, citing 4-month negotiation breakdown. KPFA's Annetta Felix reports.
What do we want? When do we want it? Now.
The pavement outside 675 Texas Street in Fairfield became a sea of picket signs Tuesday, as workers from 4 major unions representing health, social services, and administrative staff united for a 2-day walkout. They say Solano County is engaging in unfair labor practices and refusing to meet cost of living demands, while management receives double-digit raises. Michael Kitsit, a senior mental health manager and president of Local 21, says the stalemate over health care benefits has turned a professional dispute into a personal one.
They can fight with us about money all they want. You know, it's hard times. They have a fiduciary responsibility for the county. I respect that, but I'll tell you something. Don't hold healthcare over our heads.
The rally drew hundreds of people, according to union estimates. Among them was Agba Bibbs, a labor leader and social worker with 31 years of service, speaking about the wage inequality between workers and the Solano County Board of Supervisors.
They took a raise last year of 18%, and they're only offering us 6%. So 3% first year, 2%, then 1%. That doesn't cover the cost of living right now. Everything has went up, and we're doing more with less, and they're not hiring enough staff for us to actually be able to do the job effectively to serve the community. What we want is a fair raise. A fair cost of living raise would be like 5% each year. Our medical right now that we're out of contract has been cut, and they're charging us to pay our medical. Also, we want Juneteenth, and Juneteenth right now they're asking us to give up another holiday to receive Juneteenth, and it's just like they don't understand Black history, because Juneteenth is all about us not giving up anything else.
Agba's wife, Jacqueline Bibbs, joined him at the podium, describing the have and the have-not dynamic she says exists between the board and the workers.
And us standing out here, we the have-nots.
That's right.
And they're the haves. Medical insurance keeps going up. And we have to make a choice. Do I take the bottom of the barrel so that I can eat? Or do I not eat so that in case the medical emergency comes up like it did for us, we can save lives? It doesn't feel like the board, the county, our administrators, it doesn't feel like they care. And I want to work for a county that cares about me.
Staffing shortage was a recurring theme on the picket line. Adrian Lozoya, a mental health specialist who works with high-risk children, says the vacancy crisis has a direct impact on families seeking help for anxiety, depression, and PTSD.
We've had positions that just never got filled, and those positions just got removed. So what happens is our clients are having longer wait times to be seen, to be processed, to get assigned with clinicians. Doing extra work for two people does create burnout. It does cause us to feel unmotivated at times and feel neglected ourselves.
State labor leaders were also at the rally. California Labor Federation President Lorena Gonzalez reminded the board that the county's workforce could seek better opportunities in neighboring counties, leading to a permanent loss of talent in Solano, but are choosing to stay because they love their community.
You could get trained here and go somewhere else and get paid much more. But you want to work for Solano County because you are the county. And so it's time the Board of Supervisors steps up and gets back to the table. It's time that they respect you. There are 1,300 local unions in California. The California Federation of Labor Unions represents 2.3 million workers who are standing shoulder to shoulder with all of you.
For workers like Robin Smith, a clinical supervisor with 20 years at the county, the strike is also a demand for respect.
We're out here, we're on the front lines. They're getting paid, they're being taken care of. So we want that same respect.
KPFA reached out to several members of the Solano County Board of Supervisors and the County Administrator's Office for comment. Those requests were not granted by airtime. However, in an official statement, county leadership pushed back against the accusations of bad faith bargaining. The county claims it has engaged in an extensive negotiation process and has consistently been transparent with workers, emphasizing that their current offer is designed to balance fair pay with the fiscal sustainability of essential public services. The strike is set to continue through Wednesday evening. I'm Annette Felix, reporting for KPFA Radio.
In national news, Minnesota, Illinois sued Trump administration over ICE surge as administration boasts of largest homeland security operation ever. KPFA's Caitlin Clift reports.
Minnesota, and Illinois filed a lawsuit against the federal government on Monday, claiming that ICE is violating the First Amendment and other key constitutional protections. The lawsuit seeks a temporary restraining order to either limit or halt the enforcement. Illinois Attorney General A.G. Raul described the lawsuit in a statement on Monday.
We're asking the court to order federal immigration agents in Illinois to stop using unlawful tactics, including dispensing tear gas and other chemicals without warning against people who are not resisting, scanning Illinois residents' biometric information, and entering private property without warrant or an owner's permission. We are asking the court to require written documentation for the basis of questioning Illinois residents about their immigration status. We are asking the court to prohibit immigration enforcement in or near courthouses, schools, hospitals, and other sensitive locations, except in extenuating circumstances and with safeguards. And we are asking the court to require all vehicles to have visible and accurate license plates.
The lawsuit argues that ICE's heightened presence has been arbitrary, with other states having much less extensive crackdowns in comparison to the large-scale operation occurring specifically in the state of Minnesota. In a news conference Monday, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey pointed out the political angle of the attack.
If the goal was immigration enforcement, if the goal were simply to look for people that are undocumented, Minneapolis and St. Paul would not be the place where you would go. There are countless more people that are undocumented in Florida and Texas and Utah. Why are they in these much smaller cities in the middle of the Midwest? The answer is very clear. It is politics. Florida and Texas and Utah are Republican states. The reason that Minnesota and Minneapolis are being targeted is because you've got a Democratic governor, a Democratic attorney general, and you got Democratic mayors.
The Department of Homeland Security has not been shy about its extreme presence in Minnesota. In a post on X, the department claimed that its actions in the Democratic state constituted the, quote, largest DHS operation ever, end quote. DHS has been vocal about its pledge to deploy over 2,000 immigration officers into Minnesota. This deployment follows more than 2,000 arrests and detentions made in the state just since December. In addition, the Minnesota Public Radio has recently unveiled that immigration agents in Minneapolis have been using license plate readers to identify and target local anti-ICE activists. President Donald Trump has only contributed to the threats. On Tuesday, he posted a message in all caps reading, quote, "Fear not, great people of Minnesota, the day of reckoning and retribution is coming," end quote. The post came just hours after ProPublica exposed over 40 instances of federal immigration agents across the country using prohibited chokeholds or various neck restraints. The city of Minneapolis has been on edge since the fatal shooting of Renee Good, a U.S. citizen who was shot in the head by an ICE officer while behind the wheel of her vehicle. Last week's shooting was the ninth by ICE since September, including the murder of 38-year-old Silvero Villegas Gonzalez right outside of Chicago, where over 4,300 were arrested last fall as part of Operation Midway Blitz. The first assistant U.S. attorney in Minneapolis and at least five other federal prosecutors have resigned in protest over the Justice Department's decision not to hold an investigation into the fatal shooting of Renee Good. For now, Trump continues to deny wrongdoing while ramping up enforcement, which he claims is targeting undocumented Somali immigrants. Reporting for KPFA News, I'm Caitlin Clift.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A team from the Canadian military has arrived at a northern Manitoba First Nation, which is dealing with a severe water crisis. One of the reserve's water treatment plants has been out of commission for 2 weeks after a power outage. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
The power was out for days after a power line that ran between two islands on the Nelson River broke. Although power was restored after a couple of days, the outage resulted in frozen water systems, sewer backups, electrical issues, and burst pipes. About 4,400 residents were displaced after the reserve declared a state of emergency. Pimichickamack is more than 300 miles north of Winnipeg. The chief, David Monias, says a 7-member military team from the Joint Operational Support Group based in Kingston, Ontario, has arrived and will provide technical assistance and support related to critical infrastructure.
The Army, with their engineers and their logistics people, are going to be taking a look at the... They're doing a site tour on the water plant right now. Take notes and identify what needs to be fixed and assess how it needs to be fixed and what resources are required to fix it.
Monias adds that nearly every one of the 1,300 homes in the community will need some kind of repairs. And band counselor Shirley Robinson says having so many people forced out of their homes in midwinter is taking an emotional toll.
Like, they really want to go home. And there's that feeling of displacement, that feeling of isolation, that feeling of that they can't be with their community.
Monias says a second military team is due to arrive on Wednesday. Meanwhile, plumbers and other skilled workers from outside the province are also on their way to Pimichickamack to help with water and electrical issues. And Monias says a U.S. company has reached out about sending a portable water plant to the First Nation. It's not the first time Pimichickamack residents were forced to leave their reserve. Many were forced to go south twice because of wildfires. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Indigenous peoples across the U.S. have been swept up in the Trump administration's crackdown on undocumented immigrants. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, an Arizona tribe is taking steps to safeguard its tribal members.
Thank you for calling the Hualapai Tribe's message line, where we encourage you to report any encounters with ICE agents.
The Hualapai Tribe near Kingman has set up a hotline.
Please leave your name and contact information, as well as the date, location, and a brief description of the incident. All information received will be checked and documented by tribal administration.
Hualapai Chairman Dwayne Clark is urging members to remain calm and always carry their tribal ID cards with them. His administration is also pledging to aid its 2,300 members in verifying their identity should they be held by federal authorities. This comes in the aftermath of a fatal shooting by an ICE agent in Minneapolis, also where 4 members of a South Dakota tribe have been detained. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
In the Twin Cities this week, a number of tribes are issuing tribal IDs to their citizens. Tribal leaders have been raising concerns about the safety of their citizens in the area following last week's fatal shooting in Minneapolis. They're encouraging their citizens to carry identification, including tribal IDs. White Earth Nation, Red Lake Nation, Boys Fort Band, Mille Lacs Band, and Leech Lake Band are among tribes holding ID events at their urban offices. Leaders of Native organizations and grassroots groups have been responding to the shooting with community safety plans, as members of the Native community have been reporting interactions with ICE. A community prayer and gathering was held Sunday, and organizers are hosting Know Your Rights events this week. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Annetta Felix, Caitlin Clift, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Gabriel Zucker.